You're listening to the FQXI Podcast. Welcome to the new edition of the podcast from the Foundational Questions Institute, broadcasting across the multiverse.
Wait, is that technically correct, Brendan? Can we actually be heard in neighboring universes across the multiverse? What exactly do you mean by the multiverse here anyway? A quantum multiverse in which many parallel worlds exist, with alternative realities splitting off every time a quantum experiment is performed?
Good question. There is a sort of multiverse in quantum mechanics. I was thinking of the different idea that there's a cosmological multiverse with many neighboring universes, each created from their own Big Bang. A lot of cosmologists now think that's true, and these baby universes each have their own laws of physics.
What confuses me is why we don't just redefine the whole lot of neighboring universes as one big universe anyway. Why do we call that the multiverse, and how do we differentiate the cosmological multiverse from the quantum multiverse?
You're asking me to answer that?
No, I'm not, Brendan. No offense, but I decided to ask FQXI member and Nobel laureate physicist Frank Wilczek, who has been musing about multiversality, both the cosmological and the quantum versions, and thinking about how to define the multiverse, what evidence there is that a multiverse exists, and whether we can find experimental support for these ideas. Many of his thoughts will be published in the journal Classical and Quantum Gravity. When I spoke with Frank earlier, he told me how he would go about defining the universe, as distinct from the multiverse, in the cosmological context, first of all.
Well, one of the great triumphs of 20th century cosmology, the big triumph in many ways, is the establishment of the fact that laws really are universal. The same fundamental laws that are now embodied in the standard model apply everywhere we've looked. And furthermore, the contents of the universe, the chemistry and the density of stars, the kinds of objects that form, is also pretty uniform. So that's the universe. That's the conventional universe, the universe with a capital U. The multiverse concept is that, in cosmology, is basically that there are faraway regions where the laws of physics and or the contents, the kinds of things that are inhabiting space, are significantly different from what we've seen to date.
Okay, so within the universe, all the laws of physics are uniform. Also, things that happen in one universe are disconnected from what happens in other universes. Our neighbors are just too far away for us to be in contact with them today. So I guess they can't actually tune into this podcast after all.
Sadly not, or possibly happily for them. We don't actually have any direct evidence that such a multiverse exists, though, as Wilczek eloquently puts it.
Oh, to say the least, no, there's hardly any evidence at all. It's a tissue of speculation.
I like that, a tissue of speculation. But one of the strongest lines of support for the idea that a cosmological multiverse exists comes from so-called anthropic arguments.
That's from noticing that some physical quantities, things like the precise value of the mass of certain subatomic particles, can't be predicted just by looking at the theories that describe their behavior. At the moment, we just have to measure what those quantities are and use those values in our calculations, which is really frustrating because physicists want to find a clear, beautiful, unique explanation that tells us why the mass is one value and not a totally different one. We don't like the idea that these values were just set at random.
And what's really odd is that some of these quantities seem to be very conveniently tuned to be just the right values to allow intelligent life to form. If they were slightly bigger or slightly smaller, the chain of reactions that led to the formation of atoms, stars, galaxies, people, and podcasts would never have happened. And it's tough to explain why all these parameters coincidentally take these useful values, though we greatly appreciate that they do, of course. If they didn't, we wouldn't exist.
How convenient. Which brings us to the anthropic argument. It says that if there is a multiverse with many different universes, each with its own laws and parameters, then we would only find ourselves in the universes which have the quantities, like the masses of certain subatomic particles, that are suited to allowing life to arise. Mystery solved. Although it seems like a bit of a cop-out. The reason things are the way they are is because they just are? What does Wilczek think about that type of reasoning?
He's not against it, but he does urge caution that it shouldn't be overused. Here are his thoughts.
That has various implications. I mean, one is that it doesn't leave physicists who are interested in improving the fundamental laws with much to do. If they're accidental, okay, they're accidental, so you're out of business, right? Along those same lines, related to that, it's also dangerous because it sort of encourages a defeatism. You may be tempted just to give up because it can't be explained. It's just an accident that really has to be in the multiverse. And so you've missed an insight into how nature works. You've been tempted by this excuse.
So what now? Does anthropic reasoning mean that we just can't make any useful, testable predictions about the way the world is? Oh no, will all physicists now just quit?
And turn to podcasting? Let's hope not. No, Wilczek notes that there are ways to try and make rigorous testable predictions based on anthropic reasoning. As an example, he told me about axion cosmology.
Ah, axions. I wish I could think of like a Game of Thrones joke involving anyway, those are hypothetical particles with a great name. Coined by Wilczek, in fact. Axions have been proposed because, if they exist, then they could help explain why some of the weird parameters in the standard model of physics take the quirky values that they do.
In particular, they could be the mysterious particles that make up the dark matter in the cosmos, the invisible matter that we can only detect through their gravitational pull. Wilczek explains more.
The basic thing is that if axions really are the dark matter, within a large class of axion models, it turns out that different parts of the multiverse, different regions very far away, would have different quantities of axions filling them. Most places would have much more dark matter than what we have here.
This can be connected back to the multiverse. If axions do make up dark matter, Wilczek and colleagues have shown that the dark matter would most likely be more dense than we actually see around us. So why don't we see that more dense value? It's back to anthropic reasoning. Such dense amounts of dark matter would create a patch of the multiverse that is inhospitable to life. We can only evolve in a universe with an axion dark matter density that appears to be tantalizingly close to the density of dark matter that astronomers have measured today.
This is the basic content of a paper that Max Tegmark and Anthony Aguirre and Martin Rees and I wrote, and we found that it works. I mean, it works much better than we expected, actually. If you assume that axions form the dark matter in this framework, you can get an estimate of what the most likely value of the dark matter is that observers could find. And it's embarrassingly close to what's actually observed. So, you know, it's very, very tenuous evidence, but it is some encouragement that these ideas might be on the right track.
There are other independent tests that are searching to spot axions. If they find them and it turns out that they make up the dark matter, and the dark matter density takes the value we'd predict from anthropic reasoning, that would be good support for the idea that the multiverse exists. We should also mention that the paper that Wilczek refers to, in which he and colleagues worked out this dark matter density, was co-authored by FQXI's directors Max Tegmark and Anthony Aguirre. But we are in no way biased towards it because of that. I guess I should say this so it sounds like I mean it. They did not coerce us to mention it in any way.
Especially not by threatening violence.
Oh no, definitely not.
And Tegmark and Aguirre definitely did not say that they would lock Brendan's cat, Puffy, in a box with a bottle of poison that may or may not be released, depending on whether or not a radioactive atom decays through quantum processes.
No, stay away from my cat. I will not risk Puffy's life just to test out a thought experiment on whether cats are in a bizarre superposition of being both alive and dead while trapped in a box with nobody looking.
Although, and this brings us to another version of the multiverse, this time a quantum multiverse, if the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics is correct, then on opening the box, reality splits in two. In one, the radioactive atom never decayed. The poison was not released and Puffy lives. In the other...
Puffy, cover your ears.
I'm just saying, if Tegmark and Aguirre did carry out the Foster's Cat experiment, then Puffy would at least live on in one parallel universe in the quantum multiverse.
But Tegmark and Aguirre would wish they were dead in all of them. The many worlds interpretation is of no comfort to me. There's no proof that such parallel universes exist. I'm not even sure they could. Wouldn't all these new universes, popping up every instant, violate conservation of energy? Where would the energy come from to generate them?
No, well, actually, apparently, parallel universe production does not violate energy conservation, according to Wilczek, who has also been thinking about just that question.
Well, recently, just in the last 2 weeks, I started to be on Twitter. I've been Twittering. Every day I take half an hour and put something out. And so I linked to this multiversality paper when it came out. And one of my followers asked, what about conservation of energy? How could you possibly have the many worlds of quantum mechanics and still conserve energy? They, you know, wouldn't it take a tremendous amount of energy to power all these things?
That's a good question.
That's a very good question, and in fact, it's a question that was asked me by Jerry Friedman, a Nobel Prize winner, my colleague at MIT, said exactly the same thing. He said it differently. He said it much more strongly than I was discussing the many worlds interpretation, and then I was very sympathetic to it. He said, it's obviously nonsense. It conflicts with the conservation of energy. But it doesn't.
And so why doesn't it? Is it that energy only has to be conserved within each universe, or?
Yeah, the real explanation involves the equations of quantum mechanics in a fairly serious way. But, I mean, the mantra is that in quantum mechanics, energy is not a number or a quantity. So it has rather different properties than usually people think of energy as a substance, but it's not really a substance. That's a very abstract explanation. It goes with equations. But a much simpler way of thinking about it is these other worlds in the many world interpretation are very difficult to access.
Right.
And that means that they can't send energy to us. If they could trade energy with us, we would see them. They wouldn't be other worlds. They would be part of our world.
Right.
And conversely, energy doesn't leak out from us to them. So our energy is conserved effectively. Because these other worlds are inaccessible, which, if you think about it, means that the energy can't leak out. If energy could be traded with the other worlds, they wouldn't be other. They would be part of our world.
Gosh, the power of Twitter. You can follow Wilczek at Frank Wilczek. That's WILCZEK. And ask him your own questions. And maybe he'll write a paper for you, too. You can also follow us on Twitter at FQXI, but you probably won't get such profound answers from us.
Frank's jokes on Twitter are usually better than ours too. Of course, then, the question is, can we ever test whether these quantum parallel universes exist?
No, the answer is definitely no. Once reality splits, you can't influence the other parallel versions of you in the alternate reality.
Although, this is something that Wilczek is thinking hard about too, as he told me.
I'm intrigued by this, and when I have time, I hope in the next few months, but I actually want to try to quantify this issue of leakage from our world to other worlds in the many worlds interpretation. I think it may be possible that, you know, if you really look at sort of the border between classical and quantum mechanical behavior, that you will see that energy is not strictly conserved, that we do leak a little bit into the other world. Of course, they also leak into us. So the average is zero, but you'll see fluctuations that you could ascribe to this kind of influence of the other worlds. That's a very speculative thing, but it's a research project that I definitely want to pursue.
Well, I hope you do take the time to look into that, because that just sounds like, I mean, that would be brilliant if there would be some way of looking for evidence of these kind of parallel universes, which I think people have sort of given up on. So that would be
fantastic. I don't give up easily.
Good, good. And will you give credit to the Twitter follower who inspired you on this train of thought?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Co-author the paper.
Okay, gosh. So there may be a way to carry out lab experiments to test whether quantum parallel universes exist. If it was anyone other than Frank Wilczek saying that, I'd think they were nuts. So if quantum parallel universes exist, then maybe energy could be leaking between them. Or, hey, maybe our podcast is leaking between them. So I was right to say that we are broadcasting across the multiverse. Maybe.
Well, he hasn't finished looking into it yet. But when he does, we'll let you know. You can hear it here first. You can find links to all these papers on the podcast page, of course. www.fqxi.org/community/podcast. There, you'll also find an extended version of the interview with Wilczek. In this podcast, I've just used clips from his interview, but he had a lot of great stuff to say, and you can hear more of it on the podcast page. It's also worth visiting Wilczek's MIT homepage, where he has collected his thoughts on a bunch of fun physics topics.